Welcome to Advertising Week Europe 2024 in audio, powered by The Barbershop. In this podcast, we'll bring you the latest insights and trends from industry leaders in advertising and marketing. Join us as we dive into discussions that shape the future of our industry.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to our panel about distributing brand-funded entertainment with global hitmakers. And we've got an esteemed panel to join us to talk about this today. To my left, we've got Dom de Turville from Zinc Media Group, who runs the brand content and audio divisions of Zinc Media Group, which is a group of 10 UK-based production companies working across all the major media owners with hits including Putin versus the West, won a BAFTA, and many brand-funded projects. So welcome, Dominic. Ant Newman, a brand and marketing director, one of Marketing Week's top 100 currently, from Macmillan Cancer Support. Ant's worked across a variety of brand-funded entertainment projects, including a previous role at Merlin Entertainment, and most recently has been in production with season 2 of Super Surgeons for Channel 4. And then last but by no means least, at the end, we've got Matt Rotondo, who's come all the way from the US to join us. Matt is head of brands at premier Hollywood production company, Oscar-winning production company, Sugar 23. Matt's had an illustrious career working across agencies, linking global talent with big, exciting IP. Sugar 23, known for Spotlight and True Detective, amongst others. So welcome. And I should probably say I'm Lucy Sannon. I am the founder of 53 Degrees North Media, and I am a consultant bridging the gap between distribution and traditional broadcast and brand-funded entertainment. So thanks very much for joining us. So guys, to kick off, one question we get asked a lot is, about brand equity. Can you build brand equity at scale whilst keeping brand alignment? Is it possible to do that, Matt?
I have two words, Barbie. I think Barbie movie, it's not two words, but just to emphasize the point. Everybody loved Barbie because it was a great movie and it was hyper creative, but a lot of people forget that if you search Barbie before the movie buzz came out, it was all negative headlines about what the brand represented for females and families. And that was a narrative they couldn't reclaim, but for one movie. I was listening to the podcast Smartless. If you've heard it, Jason Bateman was talking about how Barbies were banned in his house until the movie happened, and now his house is pink everywhere. But it was just interesting how a strong narrative of the story just changed how people thought about it. So entertainment can telegraph your values and build that that kind of brand essence or reclaim it. So you could even say Mattel came back from a negative to a real positive.
And you recently worked on a project with Trevor Noah, very much in that big entertainment space. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that and how that came about and how that was distributed?
Sure. I think it's with Procter & Gamble, who P&G is kind of the OG of this space. I mean, there's been a lot of brands doing it, but Procter & Gamble has been really committed for a long time with P&G Studios. And, you know, if you read about it, they talk about supporting stories that need to be told, but you know, the traditional entertainment system isn't necessarily supporting them. So that's where they step in to reflect what the brand purpose initiatives are all about. And we were approached by a project to make a documentary about things that have happened recently that have changed our world forever. And as my business partner, Michael Sugar, looked at it, he's like, this is actually a series. Why wouldn't you do it as a series? There's so many things from, you know, just the impact of media to refugees to climate change and mental health, so many different areas. And they said, we tried it as a series, but no network wanted to buy it as a series. And Michael had never really done a lot with brands. So he's like, well, can I try it my way? And because I think there's something here. And so he went and aligned those issues with celebrities he knows who care about those issues. So Leonardo DiCaprio attached to, as an EP to the one about climate change, and Trevor Noah attached as the one about impact of media, and also agreed to be the EP of the entire series. Angelina Jolie to refugee crisis, LeBron James to mental health. And a different thing happened when they took that package to market. It sold. So they turned it around, but it was just how that project was built and really understanding what the talent wants to do. And also, I think Michael bringing it different than, you know, a brand marketer bringing it had an impact in its distribution.
Absolutely. And with Super Surgeons, Anthony, how did that come about? How did you decide to partner with a linear broadcaster? Did it, was it the idea first? Was it Channel 4 first?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think we were talking before this session about the whole sort of chicken and egg, and it's not linear. So as a brand owner, you're kind of used to working with an ad agency, working with a media agency, you write a brief, you get the stuff created, you put it out. You know, that sounds a bit simplistic, because it seems to take 2 years every time you do it. But, you know, this is much, much more a partnership. So we actually, I already had a relationship with Wonderhood Studios, and because David Abrahams, who owns Wonderhood Studios, previously worked for Channel 4, and I worked on a different project with him, which was Stand Up to Cancer for Cancer Research UK in a previous job. So kind of started that relationship on a high level of trust and understanding. And basically, we went to Wonderhood Studios / Wonderhood Studios came to us and said, let's do something very, very different in the space to what is typically being done in advertising in general, but especially in the not-for-profit sector. So we briefed Wonderhood Studios based on the things that we wanted to achieve. They came up with, I can't remember, it's something like 10 different kind of creative propositions, which we then worked together to narrow down and build, etc. And then they went out and, you know, did some sales around the different TV platforms and stations. And that's when Channel 4 got involved. But we had quite a few different propositions, like on the desk, if you like. And some propositions would lean into some channels more than others. So previous experience at Merlin Entertainments, for example, where did a very different thing, which was not advertiser funded programming, but was a sort of fly on the wall inside access documentary about a whale sanctuary we were building. That ended up with ITV, and ITV only bit when that was became celebrity led. So the game there became like, whilst we've got this fantastic story, we're not going to get this sold unless we get a great celebrity on board, which we did. So very, very different sort of movements and journeys within it. And the other piece in this as well. So that's three partners so far: Macmillan, Wonderhood Studios, Channel 4, and then the fourth partner is Royal Marsden Hospital, which is not really anything to do with Macmillan. So the inside access part of the docuseries is with another partner. So all of these partners working together, all with our own needs and wants, and all needing to be flexible and compromise.
And a great success, recommissioned for
season. Yeah, great success. So real success for Channel 4, because actually they got considerably higher audience figures for a 10 p.m. slot for that type of programming midweek than they usually get. So they wanted it. They wanted to do it again. And they part funded as well, which is really quite rare in advertiser funded programming. So we majority funded, but Channel 4 did part fund. And, you know, obviously we were measuring the impact of that season one as well with our brand tracking and with a bunch of other research as well. So really confident that it gave us a good ROI, especially because working with someone like Channel 4, what you can do is build in advertising deals with that as well. So we got an amount of airspace and spot times with the deal.
That's really, really good case study.
I was going to add actually that just that point about kind of at what point you bring the media owner into the conversation. Obviously it's many and varied, and what you'll sort of garner from sort of sessions like these and conversations that you have is that sort of each project is different and can be quite different. But I think from a production company perspective, we're always keen to try and bring, if it's for commercial broadcast with a sort of major broadcast partner, bring them into the conversation as far upstream as possible. Yeah. Because you really need it to take an editorial centric view.
Yeah.
And the best way to do that is to involve them as early in the process as possible. So
they've got to want the content.
They've got to want the content, because actually there aren't, if you're talking about kind of commercial broadcasts in the UK, there aren't broadcasters that are going to take something just because it has some funding behind it.
No.
So it has to have the ability to drive audiences for them. That's the sort of key metric for much every broadcaster.
And although linear and long form has its appeal and can really deliver, it's not always the right thing for the client and the project that you're working on. You had an interesting show recently, which was you decided not to go linear.
Yeah, absolutely. We were working with the Department for Business and Trade, who approached us in partnership with their agency, Wavemaker. And they basically wanted to address a key issue regarding the number of businesses in the UK that weren't considering export as a route to growth. So they really kind of wanted to change the mindset of business decision makers within SME companies. And obviously, you know, TV can do a job for something like that. But actually, I think the key thing is sort of breaking down the sort of steps of the process, really understanding first and foremost kind of what the objectives are. And for them, it was, okay, how do we get more businesses to consider that international export is a route to growth? Then thinking about, okay, well, who are we trying to talk to and where do we reach them in abundance organically? And then finding a way to talk to them in the right language that that's contextually relevant to the environment that that content is going to sit in. So we explored TV with them, but actually we said that there's other options that you should consider. You know, you've got digital publishers for whom startup business and SME business is an editorial pillar. But in the end, we decided to distribute the series with LinkedIn. It's, you know, the largest professional network in the world. It has access to more decision makers than any other platform. So we were able to take a series of made for TV style content, but deliver that on LinkedIn. So it had the same entertainment sensibilities. It was able to do the same thing, but it was adapted to a completely different environment. And we used all the functionality and the sort of community tools to engage people on that platform as well. So it wasn't just a series of five episodes following the journeys of some UK businesses trying to start their export journey in New York. We also then followed up with live Q&As on LinkedIn so that people that were engaging with the series could talk to the founder in real time, find out what their experience was like, learn from that. So TV absolutely can deliver a job, but I think brands should think about kind of their sort of core objectives first and foremost, not just the marketing objectives, but the business objectives that underpin those and start there.
I think Anthony and I were talking just before the panel about how, although when you have a linear, you decide on linear distribution strategy, if you've created an IP asset, if you create a piece of entertainment, it doesn't just have to live on linear. You can cut it up. It can go on social. It can go across digital. You get all your campaign assets, but you also get a long form piece of content, which you were talking about storytelling and how that's.
Yeah. So one thing I'd say about that is it's not just that content that you've got after the show. Actually, you need to start using that content before the show because it's in everyone's interest to be driving interest in the program. So it's quite a complicated picture because we've got content that we created for the bumpers because we're sponsoring, content that we created as a product placement, not product placement in the typical sense, but like really specialist. And then you've got the show as well. And we've got rights over some of that content and not rights over other parts. And obviously Royal Marsden have rights as well, and Channel 4 and Wanted Studios. So quite a complicated picture, but a lot of content to work with. I think the point about like the different ways that what I'm really keen on saying about the reason that you might go into this kind of world as a brand owner is if you've got quite a small brand budget, I'd probably say don't go there. Do your traditional stuff if you've got a small brand budget. My brand budget, it's about 10 million. So in that 10 million, I can just keep buying more 30-second ads or some more radio or some more outdoor. But actually, that's just getting me more and more frequency of the same thing, only being able to tell a really small story. This was a way of telling real in-depth story, and a bit like related to what you were saying about Barbie, there's a different impact that you have on the audience from this like in-depth long form that you can't have in traditional 30-second spots. So I think for me, it's all about the mix and about this being one part of your strategy, not your whole strategy.
Well, you're creating an emotional connection with the viewer, and it's what the viewer wants to watch when they don't have to watch the ads, right? They want to be driven by the entertainment, which is a big part of what Matt and Michael are doing as well, as prioritizing the entertainment first and the audience first.
Can I add to the point about money? Because people seem to care about that part of this conversation.
Absolutely.
Quite a bit, which is, you know, we're talking to brands at the development stage. So we're talking about really small bets. Our experience in entertainment is brands pick a project and it's their baby. It's the one thing they're investing in. And there's a lot of bad breaks that can happen to good projects. So if you've got that one precious project, especially when it comes with a big price tag, you're fully funding it, or there's big talent involved, all these things, then entertainment didn't work for you. And that's not how people in entertainment develop entertainment. People in entertainment place a lot of small bets across a lot of different projects at various development stages. And so we're encouraging brands to take smaller budgets to, you know, to fund a sizzle video. Because Hollywood, you may have heard, we had some big strikes recently. And, you know, dollars are appreciated from a lot of different, anywhere you can save a few bucks, both from the promotion, which you're talking about, but also from even in the earliest stages. That's a sizzle video I can pay for somewhere else, because most production companies are small businesses, small or medium sized businesses. So that makes a difference. It's just brands aren't often invited at those early stages. Part of it is because brands don't, you know, brands need more sure things, more baked things. But if you're talking to CMOs, everybody says they want to be involved earlier for the chance to shape something. So now we're kind of calling them on it a little bit. What if we did bring you in to the table and work with the producers to make it the way you want it to be? And it's not going to cost that much. And you're part of our package as we move forward.
Yeah.
So we're kind of saying just don't spend a lot of money on one thing. Spread it around.
Yeah,
it's really interesting. And thinking about money, a question that I get asked a lot, and perhaps you do as well, is, are we going to make any money back? Do you think that is it possible to monetize brand-funded content if it's editorially led? And does it matter? Did it cross your mind, Anthony, when you were making Super Surgeons, that it might reach across the world and be distributed?
Yeah, it definitely crossed our minds. We actually did a contract that if it is sold in other markets, we don't get a kickback. And that was because actually there was a shortfall in funding for making the show. So we're all taking a bit of a risk on it, but including the production company. So one of the ways that they kind of are bouncing off that risk is that they've then got something that they can sell and make more money on. That was never our aim from the project. Our aim was brand. So we're doing this instead of, as I was saying, doing normal brand stuff. And actually, I mean, this kind of happens quite a lot in my job. Like, there are things that potentially we could do that might make a bit of money, but it's actually really small margins versus the other aims that I have. So it's not something that I tend to do very often. But I can totally see in a different context how this could be such a win-win.
Yeah.
So, you know, get your thing out in your primary market and then make money back off of it. If, as to your very point, it's got to be entertaining and it's got to fit what the stations want to put out, right?
We talk in terms of just overall value, right? Like, there's the direct return you can get, and yes, that's possible. I mean, there's a lot of big houses in Hollywood because entertainment can be very lucrative. So there's that piece. But we find what is the brand value? And you were talking about the brand, you know, the brand measurement metrics that were improved by your project. So of course that's a win. Like Barbie, you can telegraph what you stand for by the entertainment you stand behind. And then it's the utility, and you did that too. These shows, especially in the world of so many platforms, they need promotion. And back to, you know, every dollar counts. You know, if even Netflix, if they have a brand partner that's going to tell people it's on this, starting this date, and it's on Netflix, that's a line item that they don't need to spend. And that's where brands get their attribution. So with that P&G story, P&G could put tune in, you know, Sunday at 9 on this channel to see our show with executive producer Leonardo DiCaprio. And no agents calling, you know, P&G being like, where's his check? They're co-producers. And so that's good attribution for them. It's promotion for the show. And And so it's direct financial value, it's brand attribution, and it's kind of tactical value that you get from having this asset that a lot of brands at the end of the process spend in terms of sponsorship or, you know, late dollars.
Yeah, I think that there are very few brands that I speak to about making content that have a sort of receipt return that is one of their key objectives. It's normally about sort of brand and marketing value that it can deliver and how it can shift sort of various brand metrics, how it can sort of drive brand equity, advocacy, you know, ultimately drive purchase and purchase intent and recommendation, all of those things. So it's an interesting question that comes up a lot, but it's very infrequent that I'll have a conversation where a brand will want something distributed in the market because they might get, you know, $20,000 or $20,000 in terms of distribution receipts off the back of it.
It wouldn't be the right reason to be getting in.
No. And it comes back to that point about kind of really understanding the objectives and what you're trying to do with sort of investing in content, really.
And some of your clients have a reach beyond the UK in terms of global markets. And how do you think about distribution when you're thinking beyond just the UK?
It varies. So a good example, we made a show for Adobe for one of their products called Photoshop Lightroom, which is their sort of photography editing software. It was a SkyArt show because their core market was the UK. They wanted it to be distributed in an environment where kind of the arts is kind of relevant and it's reaching the right audience. So their objective in the first instance was reaching the right eyeballs in the UK. Following the success of the show, because again, there's a sort of brand effectiveness study that kind of ran alongside it and was able to really kind of clearly demonstrate that it had shifted all of the key metrics in the right direction. They then said, actually, it would be great if we could help them distribute it into some of their other key markets. And then you're into a conversation about kind of what that needs to look like. Do you need to align all of these markets at the exact same time? Should we look at, you know, distributing it market by market, or should we talk to a sort of global platform, whether it's a streaming platform or a global news network? And in the end, they wanted to go forward with the latter, so we partnered with BBC World News, now BBC News, and distributed it ex-UK simultaneously into all of their key markets, where they were able to spend promotional money in those key markets,
right,
to drive eyeballs in those markets. So okay, there's lots of ways that you can distribute globally. That's one way. You know, the streaming platforms can reach a global audience kind of simultaneously, but you can also look at how you distribute a show by market as well. So there's lots of different ways, and again, it comes down to sort of what's the core objectives and what the marketing communications time plan needs to look like as well.
Yeah. So what about top tips? I think we've got a variety of producers, agencies, different sides of the fence in the audience. Will we think about what might be our top tips for distributing brand-funded entertainment and getting the eyeballs you want? I'll throw that to whoever wants to pick it up.
You're the brand. Why don't you start?
Okay. So it's not a top tip for distribution as such, but a top tip for this kind of project would be, absolutely have to have trust with who you're working with. This is not an approach where you as the brand owner get to call all the shots. You've got Ofcom regulations, you've got what the TV show needs to achieve, sorry, the TV station needs to achieve, etc. So you have to go into it with a lot of trust that you're going to work in proper partnership, and then also a lot of flexibility. So There were some key things that we thought we were going to do and get at the beginning of the project that just turned out not to be possible for one reason or another, and we had to really swerve with people. And if you don't have that trust, you're not going to be able to.
Was that mainly Ofcom related or editorial?
Some of it was Ofcom related, but some of it was actually some of it was us. So our start point for a lot of it is that we would have these case studies who had their own Macmillan story, and then we're having surgery at Royal Marsden. And as it turned out, that just isn't actually the patient journey. So the patient may well have had a lot of Macmillan experiences, but they were years before, because by the time people get to the Royal Marsden, they've gone a long way on their cancer journey. So we fundamentally couldn't put that core part of the Macmillan experience into the show. So we had to like work really hard to work out how we were going to do that differently and how we were going to do the product placement in it.
I was going to say, I think it kind of echoes sort of what I've said before, and it sounds really obvious, but I think so really comprehensive planning and being really kind of clear on what you're trying to achieve up front is going to help if you are thinking multi-market or global, because, you know, as we were hearing, there's compliance considerations which vary by market, which, you know, require reversioning. If you have a kind of multi-market strategy, there's different rules around the level of integration that you need to consider. So I think, you know, if you take a viewer-centric approach to the content in the first place and sort of be mindful about how you show up as a brand and think in terms of being additive rather than just trying to use it as an opportunity to shove your message into somebody's face. I think that's key. But yeah, really understanding what you're trying to do, who you're trying to reach in key markets, and spending the time up front in that planning phase. You know, we get a lot of briefs that seem like really fast turnaround, and you go, actually, you're not going to be able to exploit this properly unless you give more time to the process.
My turn. You know, a lot of times brands bring their ideas to Hollywood to execute, and then it's just whoever you're approaching is deciding if the check's worth the trouble versus looking at the projects that Hollywood wants to make that align with themes that your brand might stand for. So, and there are a lot of themes. Like, we tell brands, think about your best ad buy. Like, what do you love about the thing on your, you know, your advertising plan? And what if you made your version of that and you owned it and crafted it? But it's still got to be, you know, it's still got to be entertainment. And that's why it's worth looking at the projects Hollywood is passionate about and seeing how you could fit in. And there's so many general themes. Both of them, we say, think in terms of function. If you're in travel, there's tons of shows about travel or food or families or what have you. Then there are things in culture that you just support. You know, beer and soda supports music and sports. So there's lots of shows about that. And then it's, like I said, you telegraph what you stand for by what you stand behind. And there's lots of shows, you know, female forward shows. Barbie did that. You know, there's, you know, sustainability, education, diversity. So there's a lot of programs. So you can align by themes. And like I said, then you start to work with the producers to shape it, to make it really closer to what your specific take on that is. So that's one thing, is think about what Hollywood wants to make that's already that much further down the road and you're supporting the project versus like, here, will you make this for me? And how many zeros? And then, you know, smaller bets, the opposite of that, like do a couple of those projects at lower investments.
Yeah.
So those are probably two of the biggest at this early stage.
That's really good. Really good insight. Do you think we're all positive about the future of brand funded entertainment? Is it a growing area? Is it future bright?
There's a lot of people talking about this for a very long time, and because it's been a vision for a very long time. I think a couple things have changed. The Hollywood strikes and the economics of Hollywood make the distributors more willing than ever before. Because I've heard so many times, like, we quantified the value of all a brand's assets and what they could deploy on behalf of a project they would bring to, and networks couldn't be bothered. They're just like, you know what, we'll take the ad dollars, thank you very much. Those days they've changed. And producers are open for the same reason. So I think timing and economics is a big reason. Partners are more valued than ever before, which give brands a voice that give them comfort too, I would say.
And traditional media is losing ground. So as brand owners, we can't just carry on doing the same things that worked in the 80s, sadly. So I think branded content is absolutely here to stay and grow.
Yeah, you've got kind of everything aligning, you know, the change in kind of audience behavior and how they're seeking out content, what they're looking for, and the sort of focus on you know, talking, you know, as Matt was saying, you know, focusing on the things that they care about. And then, yeah, you've got the kind of economic circumstances, which mean that, you know, certainly in the UK, most of the commercial broadcasters are more open to working with brands to fund content than ever before as well. So it does feel like it is a really kind of rich time for forward-thinking brands to be thinking about how they how they incorporate that as part of their overall strategies.
I think we'll take that as a good note to finish on, a positive note. Thank you very much, guys, for joining us. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Advertising Week Europe 2024 in audio. Stay connected with us on social media using the handle @AdvertisingWeek and visit our website europe.advertisingweek.com for more exclusive content. This podcast was produced by Podcander, the audio conference solution.